then it occurred to me, what luck.
Okay.
I swore a solemn
My family
years
really
ago,
intends
I was invited to a party.
Totally different.
And I never
I come from a large Irish, Italian, Catholic family.
At the sound of the gong, it is time for more stories from Milwaukee's Ex Fabula Wednesday night on WWM. I'm Bruce Winter. Leah Delaney, the co-founder of Milwaukee's Ex Fabula, is here as she is every Wednesday evening at this exact time.
I know, it's
she
crazy.
She always shows up.
It's uncanny.
Well, I like it that you're here on time. But she brings stories from Ex Fabula events of the past, and we share them on the radio because a lot of these are too good just to go into a vault somewhere, and they're worthy of hearing again. And we put together a little theme every week, and the theme this week is
illegal.
It's illegal. Okay, we're going to hear a couple of stories. Want to do one right away and then talk
Who,
about
me?
Stuff? Yeah. No, I mean, do one of the stories right away.
Yeah, we'll
talk.
Yes, yeah, definitely.
Yes. Well, the story is playing. We're going to do something illegal.
No. Actually, I was hoping you tell your illegal story that you told me about 5 minutes ago. Just kidding. Yeah, let's just jump right into one of the stories. This one was taken from one of our story slams back in 2011 when the theme was confessions. And here is no stranger to the Ex Fabula stage, Brooke Maroldi.
That's a familiar name.
It is. How do you know?
When we did these shows in their full length in the past,
yes, yes.
This name came up before.
Yeah, so. Actually, and this was a story that won her a slot into one of the stories, one of the big story slams out on Turner Hall.
Right, one of the finals. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh. All right, so with that build-up, Brooke
We're
Maroldi.
Still recording? Okay.
Here we go.
So I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, and it was a phenomenal place to grow up, but one of the most incredible things that can happen to a child happened in Brooklyn and all of New York, which was that it wasn't the Pope's visit. It was the New York World's Fair. And I don't think they have World's Fairs anymore, or if they do, nobody really cares about them anymore because they suck. But the New York World's Fair was like having every single Disney kind of land and Noah's Ark, and Six Flags, and everything else rolled into one, and it was a half hour from my house. And it was there for 2 years. And so we went like 30 or 40 times. We were just like World's Fair junkies. And my older brother was kind of a Weisenheimer kid. He was an instigator. And the cool thing about the World's Fair was that it was cultural because all these other countries were represented, and it was also very futuristic. So like in the 60s when this happened, GM and Chrysler and GE, they were like the big companies. And the rides that GM and Ford and those places would do, you got into real cars. And you got to kind of like act like you were driving the cars, and It was just a wonderland for a kid. And there was a lot of other kinds of corporate pavilions and stuff. And one of them was the Lifesavers Pavilion. And the Lifesavers was basically an elevator ride up, maybe five stories. And then on the top of it was this huge white lifesaver. And on the elevator ride up, there's this like very proper-looking young woman who's like with a little hat and a little lifesaver's button, and she looked like a 1960s stewardess, not a flight attendant. She looked like a stewardess, and she was telling you the history of lifesavers and why there's a hole in the lifesavers and how they get the hole in it. And we ride all the way up, and when you get up to the observation deck, they hand out these little rolls of lifesavers, gotcha. And my brother snuck around the back and found out where, like, they were keeping all the little rolls of lifesavers. So he's, like, hoarding them. And we go to the edge, and we're looking out. And we start, like, aiming at people and tossing the lifesavers. And if you ever have an opportunity to do this, the fruit ones aren't so good. There's too much air, but the mint ones, man, you could just really get those. And then we're doing that for like 5 minutes, and suddenly we feel this hand reach out and pull us by the ears, and it was the lifesaver stewardess. And she pulled us over and she said, "I've been watching you two. You and are an abomination to the lifesaver's pavilion. And you're causing shame to the world's fair. And you are now banned from the lifesaver's pavilion." And guys like with security guards escorted us on the elevator ride of shame. We're just going down, and then we get out, and in true form, my brother gets out and goes, "So long, suckers!" And so flash forward many years. I go to film school, and it's in the 80s, and there wasn't a lot of work. So I got a lot of freelance work with corporations, and I did one for Planner's Peanuts, and they loved it because it was very artsy with the peanuts. And they were owned by Nabisco, and Nabisco also owned Lifesavers. And Lifesavers saw the peanut video, and they flew me out to Lifesaver Land. Where is it? Oh, Holland, Michigan. And I did this big Lifesaver video. The budget was like $100,000, ridiculous. And in the video, the fruit were the really good ones, the fruit flavors, because they were colorful. So I did this video, made it look all artsy and cool. And then they flew me out again for the big premiere of the Lifesavers video, and it was all the heads of all the companies and, you know, white guys with gray hair and me, basically. And so they show it, and they're very happy. And they all look to me, and I said, "Guys, I have a confession to make." And I told them the entire Lifesaver story, and they said, "The ban is lifted. You can go back." Thank you.
That was Brooke Maroldi with her confession story back at our Story Slam held at Stonefly Brewery in 2011.
And we are having Ex-Fabulous Stories on the air every Wednesday night in the 9 o'clock hour. Leah Delaney is nice enough to take time out of her Wednesday night and bring us some stories from past Story Slam events from over the years and give them another airplay. And by and large, I bet you this is the first time you've heard these. And most of these I have not heard before either, so it's a lot of fun. These are real people from the Milwaukee area telling real stories about their life. It is unscripted. They can't take any notes up there. They can't write on their palms of their hands or anything like that. It's totally extemporaneous, and that's what makes it so interesting and so unpredictable. Anyway, the theme tonight is illegal stuff, and as long as we're talking about the live events, the kickoff for the event is just around the corner. Heck, yep. Labor Day weekend's coming up, and your kickoff is shortly thereafter.
Yeah, our kickoff is actually for Season 6. It's going to be held at Hot Water Warehouse on Thursday, September 18th. And there will be tickets available on our website at exfabula.com. We'll be featuring four of our most favorite storytellers over the past. Some of those stories you might have heard, you might not have heard, but those are the ones that people keep talking about to this day.
Hmm. That sounds like a good time. And then thereafter, monthly story slams during the course of the year? Okay.
Yeah, we start up in October, actually. And we have new venues, and I can't wait to talk about them, but I can't talk about them yet.
We will talk about them in the weeks ahead.
I know.
We have this forum for you every night, every Wednesday night, so you have the opportunity.
Yeah.
We got one more story to get to here tonight. Yes. Emmett Gross, what's this one about?
Oh, this is from our Busted Story Slam back in 2010. Here is Emmett Gross with his illegal story.
So please welcome to the stage, Emmett Gross.
All right, so I love gangster movies. And there was a period in time where most of my major life decisions were based on gangster movies. I realize, looking back on it now, it took me to some strange places. And here's one of them. So me and my friend Luke thought we were natural-born street hustlers. We were the guys in front of Summerfest selling $3 Summerfest pins for $5, clocking $2 a sale, and really thinking we were some big money hustlers. We thought we were really doing it. In actuality, we were out in the hot sun, 5-6 hours a day, making maybe $6 an hour. So we weren't quite to the level we thought we were. But when the Major League Baseball All-Star Game came here in 2002, that was our meal ticket. We were going to go from petty street hustlers to kingpins. This was the move where we were going to become Scarface. We had a plan. We were going to sell T-shirts and other souvenirs, and we were going to do it legal. That was the biggest thing. We had done our homework. We knew the permits we needed. We knew how to get this done. What we didn't know is how slow state bureaucracy works. So when the game day came and we didn't have our permits, we did the only thing we could do, the thing that we thought we did best, which was hit the streets and try and move some merchandise. And that's exactly what we did until a scrubby-looking guy walked up to us, flipped open his badge, and we were busted. We were whisked away to a tiny antechamber of a holding cell underneath Miller Park. And after sitting in that cell for about an hour, the cop that busted us comes up to us and says, "I showed your stuff to Major League Baseball, and they want to sue you for copyright infringement." Then he adds, "I think I could talk them out of it, but you got to come clean with me. You got to tell me who you're working for and how many of these shirts are still out on the streets." And that was the point where the whole thing became very surreal. It was this fantasy we had built for ourselves had grown to such a proportion that the cop believed it. Everybody believed it. This idea that we were hustlers, the idea of it was bigger than any little scheme we'd ever pulled, any little hustle we'd ever done, anything that we were. Our mythos was bigger than what we were. So we actually believed we were hustlers, and this cop apparently believed he had stumbled onto some international T-shirt counterfeiting ring, and if he could just get us to flip, he could work his way up the chain, and like he would get to Kaiser Soze or something. Like, this was his break. And the funny thing was about it, if he was observant, he wasn't that far off. I had gotten back from New York City that morning. I'd driven back from New York to do this hustle. I had on my wrist a genuine street corner New York Rolex, back when you could still get them off the street. I was also wearing a bootleg Scarface T-shirt I got from some little store down on Broadway. So if he was observant enough, he would have seen counterfeit shirt, counterfeit watch, two counterfeit hustlers here, getting sweated by a cop with a counterfeit charge that we knew was just bull. So we just we kind of convinced him that we were as small as we really were. We ended up with a ticket for soliciting without a permit, the very thing that we had planned, the one plan we had to avoid. We ended up primarily because the state couldn't get us our damn permits on time. But ended up leaving that situation with a little bit of a clearer picture of who we actually were and what we were doing. We were not Kaiser Soze. We were not Stringer Bell and Avon Barksdale in the jail cell. We were just two little kids that thought we could make a couple bucks and ended up getting busted. Thank you.
And that was Emmett Gross with his busted story back at our Story Slam held at the Garage back in 2010.
Mm-hmm. Now, I was looking at your notes here, and there's something here I don't – you have workshops coming up. What is that? You're teaching people to
– tell a story.
Do a story?
Yeah. You know, it's –
how to be on stage?
No, not necessarily. This is not miming or acting 101 where we ask you to produce a monologue or something. Couldn't be furthest from the truth, actually. We hold workshops to sort of give you an idea and pointers on how to craft your story. Hmm. We have storytelling guidelines on our website that you can check out and, you know, have a strong beginning, have a moment of reflection, and then have a strong ending. But it's more than that. And we are able to help you craft your personal story. And those workshops are coming up. We're having one at the Walker's Point Art Center. That's going to be on Saturday, September 20th. And just so everybody knows, if members show up, they do get like a 2-for-1. So you and your buddy can, you know, do the whole workshop and tell each other stories all night long. That sounded lascivious, but... could be very wholesome. Fine.
I guess, you know, all I can say is hamana, hamana, hamana. But if you're an ex-Fabula member, you get the 2-for-1, and you can become an ex-Fabula member by visiting your website, correct?
Indeed, exfabula.com.
You got a lot going on.
I know.
In addition to coming down and gracing the radio station on Wednesday nights. Thank you again. Good stories again tonight.
Yeah, indeed. Thanks a lot, Bruce.